Hello, it's Wayne Perry, the TV carpenter here. Can I ask you a question? Are you a DIY doer? Meaning, do you like DIY? Do you like fixing things in your home? Or does it frighten you and you'd rather somebody else did it, like your other half, or you paid somebody to come and do it? The reason I'm asking the question is, it's either one or the other. People don't realise anyone can be a DIY doer. And for me, when I say that, I don't mean the big jobs. I don't mean putting up shelves. I don't mean laying laminate flooring. For me, DIY is about having a safe house for you and your family. So when I say safe, knowing how the smoke alarm works and why does it beep, or knowing how to turn your water off if your house is flooding, or if the fuse trips and your electrics go out, knowing what all the buttons on the fuse board do. So that's a safe home. I think everyone should have that. Everyone should have a practical home, meaning everything should work as it should. So if your curtain tracks falls out the wall, you know how to put it on. Or if your toilet seat breaks, you know how to change it. But also, I think everyone should have a beautiful home, knowing what paint types to use, knowing how to upcycle some furniture. If you would like a safe, practical and beautiful home, let me teach you the DIY around it. All you need to do is join the DIY Doers Facebook group. You can find it on Facebook, or you can go to my website, thetvcarpenter.com, and I'll link you straight through to there. Let me help you create a safe, beautiful, and practical home for you and your family. On today's show, I'll be talking with Alan Gardner. He's the Chelsea Flower Show designer and TV presenter of The Autistic Gardener.
I had never been formally trained in garden design. I've never had a lesson in my life. I'm a horticulturalist, so I knew all about the ingredients, but I wasn't sure about how you should put it together.
Yeah.
And I think that was probably the best thing. Some of the greatest garden designers out there have never been on a course in their lives and plough their own furrow. You go away to college and you take a course and everybody comes out designing the same way.
Yeah.
Design should be fun. I personally would like to ditch the drawing.
Hello and welcome to the TV Carpenter. My name is Wayne Perry. This is a podcast where I interview my friends from the world of interior design shows and garden makeover shows, all with the aim of empowering you to create your dream home. So I've been busy this last week. It's been absolutely crazy because this week I've had loads of meetings with the Ideal Home Show. As I said before, I'm working with the Ideal Home Show this year. I'm doing upcycling talks and doing some DIY talks. I'll be teaching people how to seal your bath and how to fix wonky kitchen cabinets and how to update and improve your home on a budget. I'll be doing those on the main stage. And also, we've had a load of meetings this week with the lovely Lynn Lamborn. You remember, she was one of my guests and she talked all about sustainability. And also, I co-designed and built the show garden with her last year, and we've been asked to do it again this year. The theme of the Ideal Home Show, we're pleased to say, is sustainability. The whole of the event is pushing for people to be sustainable in the way they build, in the way they design. And so there's a big drive for that. So the garden, again, will always, if it involves Lynn and myself, it will always have a sustainability element to it. So me and Lynn have had quite a few meetings with the Ideal Home Show people and together coming up with some cool design. So this week has been mainly working on that. And also working on the podcast. So I'm having chats with various different people to come on and be a guest on the live podcast recordings that we'll be doing at the Ideal Home Show. And I'm just waiting for some final confirmations, but I've got some pretty exciting names who are interested in being interviewed by me for this podcast. I've also finally finished my downstairs hall. I've added all the other little bits and bobs to it. So I made a huge mirror, a long mirror, and I've added some gold trim to it. And also I've made some gold lights. And also at the top of the door, I had a glass panel above, which had the wire in there, and it had to be there. for fire safety reasons, but it always looks really, really ugly. And I had some spare rattan cane, so I've decided to put some rattan cane up there, which will cover it, so it'll look like a nice screen, which is going to look really good. So if you get a chance, have a look on my Instagram, and you can see that. It was great using the Thorndown paint, the new blue, Avalon blue, which is going to be part of their new Heritage range. And it was great just, you know, using their paint properly. I've used it before in the past, and I know it's good, and I've mainly used it externally, but it was nice to use it inside, particularly as it was going to go, it went on wood, and it also went on the walls, it went on MDF, it went on pine, and it covered really well. I ended up giving it three coats because it was a hallway. The first coat was a bit like a primer, and then after that, it was just, it just went on like a dream, and it blocks out the colour. I've had so many people speak to me saying how much they enjoy it and how much they've loved it, and actually where can they get that colour from. So don't forget, if you go to thorndown.co.uk and type in the code the TV Carpenter, or just TV Carpenter, you receive 15% discount on all their online purchases. So I had a little chat with Caroline about Thorndown being used as an internal paint and as like an upcycling project and things. So have a little listen to this short 1 minute interview with Caroline as we discuss the benefits of using Thorndown when upcycling.
For upcycling furniture in particular, it's just so nice and easy to use because it is so durable. It means that you don't have to do loads of different processes to it. The fact that it's self-priming means that you can literally just slap a single coat of paint onto a piece of wooden furniture. And one coat will give it that really nice shabby chic look, or you can do two coats and have a far nicer kind of almost like brand new kind of look to it. I think it's just a very nice paint to use, and with the extensive colour range as well, you just have so much scope, and you don't have to spend ages with sort of all the prep and then having to put top coats on top of it either.
Because in some other paints you have to like seal with waxes and varnishes and things like that. With, you know, we know this has got like a satin finish to it already, so it already feels like it's finished after two coats.
Exactly, yes. And because it is so durable, because it's designed to be water repellent and to live and to last outside than inside a house, it means that it's even more durable, and it's great for things like sort of bathroom paneling and also for kitchen cupboards, because they're the kind of things that take a lot of punishment. So lots of water gets sprayed over them, you have to scrub them clean. So with these paints, again, it just means that you only need a couple of coats and it's all done, and it's going to stay looking good for years.
Now it's time for the main event, as you get to listen to my interview with a lovely Alan Gardner, or as you might know him, the autistic gardener. I've known Alan for about 4 or 5 years. I did my first ever garden show on his show, The Autistic Gardener, where I got to make this crazy geodesic dome, and we talk about that in the interview. But a little bit of information about Alan. He sadly had severe heart failure about 2 years ago. I think 2.5 years ago, and he wasn't feeling very well, and I think it took about 11 different appointments to doctors before they suddenly realised that actually he got rushed to hospital and he lost about 80% of his heart. So he really struggles at the moment. I think he said at one point he does his allotment on his hands and knees. If he stands up too quickly, he faints. But he's slowly getting better. He's had a heart like pacemaker fitted and he's had major heart surgery, so he's been off our screens for a while, but he's coming back. He's got some flower show events happening, and he's doing some show gardens. He's done so much, and I wanted to get him on the podcast just because he's a fountain of all knowledge, and the way he works is so different to any garden designer I have ever worked with before. He's so much fun. Firstly, actually, I just want to say, how are you doing? How's things?
I think I'm all right.
Yeah?
Yeah. The best way to put this is I'm broken. So the feelings I get, the sensations I get, they're different and I don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, I don't feel unwell. To the point of, but yeah, sometimes I get palpitations, sometimes I might have a bit of angina, Sometimes I have insects crawling all over me.
Oh, just the feel of it, that sense of it.
Yeah, that's when my defibrillator's switched itself on and wants to give me a little kick.
So how does the defibrillator work then? Does it sense that your heart's not working 100% and then just gives you a boost?
The defibrillator is there. It's a future-proof to stop me having a cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
So you've got to understand that a cardiac arrest is an electrical fault. Your heart just stops beating.
Yeah.
You have 4 minutes to live. Precursor to having that, your heart goes into an irregular pattern.
Yeah.
He will sense that happening and he will shock me back into rhythm. So he's done very little over the last 6 months. He was shocking me twice a week at one point.
Really?
It was only, a couple of months ago that my cardiology nurse said I could get on an aeroplane and fly to America.
Wow, okay.
If I took necessary precautions. Before then, it was you'd probably have to take oxygen. And you go, why would you do that to yourself?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? What is the point of trying to kill myself?
Yeah.
By doing it's everything in life is, you know, do you want to do it? I'm doing my first show garden.
No, where?
Since heart failure, I've done 40. I mean, I've had three gardens at Chelsea.
Yeah.
But I'm doing a garden at Bloom.
Okay, fabulous.
Which is the Irish Chelsea.
Yeah. When will that be announced then?
Very shortly in January. I thought in this month sometime.
All right.
I would have hoped.
Yeah.
The show's in May.
Uh-huh.
I'm doing it for an autism charity.
Oh, fabulous. So what's the process of getting a garden at somewhere like Bloom or somewhere like Chelsea? How does that work then?
You have to come up with a design and submit it and have someone to pay for it.
Okay, so you pitch the idea to Chelsea and they pick from all the designs that come through and then...
Yes, you submit a design according to their criteria. They want to see everything and you've got to have someone who's basically gone, I'm going to pay for this.
Yeah, so you get a sponsorship deal of some sort.
And it's signed. I was in Clonakilty in County Cork for 4 days. Mandy came along to give a talk. They paid me the talk. So we'd gone over to Ireland, so they're looking after us, putting us posh hotels. And I just had a little chat about show gardens, and I ended up in front of a guy called Eugene Scally, who owns Super Value, which is the biggest chain of supermarkets in Ireland, over 200 supermarkets, and he was part of the franchise thing. And he said 15 minutes I was with him, and he said, sounds like a great idea, leant across the table, shook my hands and says, I'll give you €40,000.
Amazing.
I didn't even go to get a show garden. The way I've done it, I've designed it, submitted it, it's been approved, been accepted. I've basically passed it to my show garden team.
Yeah.
And gone bigger.
Yeah, so I think last time I spoke to you, we were chatting and you were just saying, literally, you can't stand up too quickly without fainting. So you were gardening in your allotment, but kind of on your hands and knees kind of thing.
You can't put your finger on it. I do 12,000 steps a day. It's a slight struggle, but, you know, I can do lots of things. I can't dig holes. I can't plant plants. I can look after my allotment on all fours. But then the other day, I decided to go with a cloth round the door handles on the doors, you know, where everybody sort of grabs the door and knocks the door handle. Only did four doors and had an angina attack.
No.
So, I mean, you know what I mean? I went to Ireland for 4 days and did, you know, very long days and talks of an evening time and was all right.
Yeah. So it's weird. How will you do the show garden then? How much of that will you be involved? Are you literally going to hand it over to your team and then just watch from afar? But because I know you, Alan, I've worked with you. I know you like to get stuck in.
I'm watching from about, 350 mile away.
Really? So you're literally going to keep that far away? Because I know you'd want to get involved.
I pass the plant in to Jan, who's a garden designer, has done show gardens, and she helped me plant the Chelsea garden. She passed me the plants and I put them in 1,500 of them. So what do I do? Do I fly to Ireland, go and visit all the nurseries, choose all the plants, say to Jan, there's the plants, and then turn up, sit there for a week on a chair looking at it, going, I think you should have a purple one there. I went, no, I ain't going to do any of that. There you go, Jan, off to Ireland, choose the plants. You're planting them,
yeah.
And I'm going to turn up the day before the show opens.
Yeah. Just to double check.
It's the only way I can do it. I trust them wholly. If I can't do it, I can't do it. It's, you know, I'm lying on the bed at home chatting to you about this, and I lie on the bed chatting to them about that,
yeah.
Thinking, yeah, I could do that. And I couldn't even wipe the door handle down, you know?
Oh, bless you.
You haven't got to judge yourself by what you previously could do.
Yeah.
If you can't do it, then adapt. And I think I've been I've been immensely lucky in the fact that, A, I am doing all right. I was supposed to be dead. You know, 90% dead in the first 12 months. And it's been over 2 years now.
Yeah.
So I should be, you know, should be grateful for that. And just adapt and do things. That show garden landed upon a plate in front of me.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't going to turn down 40,000 euros to have got. It was an opportunity. It's for an autism charity, as I am.
Yeah.
And they'll get a lot of good from it.
I worked with you on the Autistic Garden. The whole premise of that was that your brain, you were using your brain, the gift that you've been given, at, you know, as an autistic guy, your brain thinks differently. So you design gardens differently. So talk me through that process then. What makes your designs different from Joe Blogg's designer down the road?
There has to be something different in the garden. There has to be... There has to be more, and in my case, I'm adding a narrative. I'm adding a story, a reason why the garden is what the garden is. So yeah, I mean, I've just completed a garden in Southern Ireland that's surrounded by peat bogs, and it's bringing that thought. Its surroundings is always very important.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get gardens in different locations. I've got a garden at the moment to do in Staffordshire, which is quite exciting for me. It's been the first gardens in the last six that I haven't got. I have to go on an aeroplane to go and see. I can just get in the car and go. But all these gardens are, you know, did a garden in Alderney. Yeah, one of the smaller Channel Isles.
Yeah.
Did a garden in Norfolk that overlooked the Broads, where I put triangular walls in that were like little gateways into the garden, which mimicked the sails of the ships that went past the boats.
Yeah.
And then we charred them black because all the barns in that part of the woods are actually charred timber to preserve them. So we're picking up the charcoal-preserved barns and we're picking up the shapes of the boats that go through the Broads.
So there's always like a narrative then. You always try and link on to something.
Yeah, there has to be a reasoning why. There's a lot of garden designers out there basically trying to reinvent the wheel. I think at the moment in garden design there's too many sub-mods. Suburban modernism, you know, the jacuzzi, the decking, the wall, the grasses, they're becoming outdoor living spaces.
Yeah.
But for human beings, where I think the truth of the matter is they have to be outdoor living spaces for every creature there is.
Yeah.
Not just for us. We have to share it.
Does gardens still excite you then? Does it still give you a buzz?
Oh, yeah. Well, if it didn't, I wouldn't do it.
That's true.
As soon as that becomes sort of, you know, heart failure 2 years ago gave me a chance to, if I wanted to reinvent myself, I didn't think what I had done previous was wrong. And, I'd had a lovely life. And if it all ended there, I think I could have been quite content.
Yeah.
This was not a second chance. This was, don't know how to put this. When there's a prospect of you possibly dying, really does allow you to open up
yeah.
to whatever you want. in a very, very strange way. I mean, I've never been the sort of person that cared what people thought, or you wouldn't walk around with bright pink hair, but, you know, doing something that you want to do. But that there is this, you know, you haven't got to worry about an ongoing 10-year future career because there ain't going to be one.
Okay.
So you just get on with it.
Yeah. Knowing, like you've just said, you know that there might not be a 10-year career, but does the seasons affect you now? Like every year, like I plant certain things. For example, in my garden, I have a bleeding heart plant that I planted a bulb a few years ago, and every spring it comes up bigger and better, and it just sparks this joy in me, seeing that I haven't managed to kill it off because it literally dies down to nothing and then comes back in full bloom. And you see that, you know, yearly thing that happens. Has your planting changed because, you know, you might not see something into its fruition in 5-10 years time?
You have to. The garden that I've got to do in Staffordshire, I want to have lots of trees. The fact that I won't be here to see them fully grow, and for that matter, neither will you, doesn't really stop the impetus to actually do that. I've always been very fond of what could be referred to as soap bubbles, planting like poppies that look glorious for about 2 or 3 weeks and then are gone. They just look spectacular and then they just go pop and they're gone. Rhododendrons are soap bubbles, aren't they? They come out in the spring, and like your Dicentra probably looks really fantastic for about 2 or 3 weeks and then gone.
Yeah. So it hasn't altered you. You've always done it that way, which is amazing. How did you get into the world of? Because I was, like I say, I met you doing the autistic gardener, where you forced me to build a geodesic dome, which I've never fully forgiven you for.
Rearrange those words, forced. I don't remember forcing you.
Well, I remember
the look on your face, but. This guy's a lunatic. How is this? And you've got to admit that the end result did look like lunar landing module.
Well, I think what it was is I was booked by the garden producer Thea to make this geodesic dome, which I thought was going to be a kit. And then I arrived on the day and was told, no, you're making it from scratch, from sheets of birch, from ply. And then I think I swore at Thea off camera going, I can't do this. And she went, well, you're here now, you better. And then while I'm chatting with you, you go, yeah, actually, I was thinking we'd like to put windows in it. It needs to be watertight because we're putting electric in there. And we'd like the top to open up like a lotus flower. And at that point, I remember looking at you going, I can't even spell the word or even say the word geodesic. So, but yeah, so I worked with you.
I'm an artist, darling.
A darling.
I mean, I don't have to know how to do it.
I employ other people to point. You can point and make me do it. But actually, to be fair, it was the first garden show I'd ever done, and it was probably to date, it's probably one of the best things I've ever made, and I was super proud of that. But
yeah, it was fun. It's fun doing it when you've even without the cameras, that would have been fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was something different, and I think that's what's cool about it is the sort of contractors that I got that do my work. When I contact them, I say I've got a design for them. The excitement is tangible. Yeah, these poor guys are laying miles and miles and miles of bricks or slabs or something like that. And here is a chance to do something different.
Yeah.
And I think even they don't realise what it's going to look like until they've done it. it's like these alien films where the aliens have sent some instructions.
Yeah.
And you follow them and you build yourself a spaceship. You know what I mean? It's, That's what makes life interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's what makes you interesting, though, Alan. I think, like I say, I've worked on lots of garden shows, and I've seen some amazing designs. But I, you know, working with you on the Autistic Gardener and just seeing, I remember we did one, and you went off. The inspiration was you went off on the moors, and they had these big wind turbines, and you chose like where the shadows of the wind, when the wind turbines weren't turning and they were still, and you got these crisscross lines in the ground of the shadows
where the blades pass.
Yeah, and that was the theme for the garden, and like, because originally the theme was the moorlands or something like that, and they were like, most people would do rolling hills, but you chose these angles and angulars, and then, you know, like the geodesic, you went off grid references lines, so it had to go from the grid reference lines, you know, of latitude and altitude, so they were way left field. But actually, the response in the garden and the because we put those little constraints within your design, it meant that it was just brilliant. And I think that's what's made your design so exciting. But how did you get into garden design to start? As how did you get into TV gardens anyway? How did you end up working on TV?
Well, I was doing general garden activities as a self-employed person and maintaining things. Garden design, I'd done some previously, and I decided in 1996 that I was going to do garden design. I had never been formally trained in garden design. I've never had a lesson in my life. I'm a horticulturalist, so I knew all about the ingredients, but I wasn't sure about how you should put it together.
Yeah.
And I think that was probably the best thing. Some of the greatest garden designers out there have never been on a course in their lives and plough their own furrow. You go away to college and you take a course, and everybody comes out designing the same way.
Yeah.
Design should be fun. I personally would like to ditch the drawing. People get very, very confused about drawings. You get garden designers who do the most beautiful drawings and draw every single little brick and every little single slab in it, where what they're actually doing is designing a garden and selling a design to a client, not a drawing. Those two are very separate things. The drawing is a means to show the client what you want to do, and is a means to show the contractor where things have to go, but that's where it starts, that's where it ends.
Yeah. Things have to organically, what's quite nice about you, like, yeah, because it was a TV show, things had to be planned out because we're limited with time. But there was still an element of actually, you know, that's not going to work. And
Did you realise, for instance, that the one based on wind turbines, every single series was the same, but when you see on the TV meeting the client, that's the first time I met the client.
Yeah,
I haven't met them beforehand. And then when I go away from there, I had 4 days to design it.
Wow.
And then that design had to be taken to the production company in London, where I would discuss it with everybody in the room, and they would film it. And then that film was sent in turn to Channel 4, and then the Channel 4 bosses would look at it to see if they liked it or not, and then they would come back and go, yeah, okay.
Uh-huh.
And then Theo would have to go and find all the materials for it.
Ah, okay. So,
days on each one, you know, and I could spend 2 or 3 weeks thinking about a design. You know, you don't just sit at a drawing board and start drawing lines. You've got to know what you're going to draw before you draw it.
Yeah.
Am I going to draw a spaceship or am I going to draw a cow? You know, you've got to know what you want. So you have to think about it. And I just wander around, you know, go for a walk or whatever for the next 2 weeks and think about it, where I had 4 days.
Yeah. And how, like what I love, we've celebrated your autism, and it's kind of been a, you know, it's proved that you've been able to create some amazing designs. But has the autism ever been an issue for you? Because I know what TV environments are like, and I know you don't go to press night parties and things like that. You know, has it ever caused you to be uncomfortable whilst in those situations, doing those kind of shows?
TV apparently appears to be very autistically friendly. You know, your escort is, well, I was, it wasn't just because I was autistic, you know, they would arrange me to send me some tickets for a train. I'd go to the train station, get on the train, someone would meet me at the other end, and that was it for an entire week. There was always somebody with me or people with me. You know, I went to 3 states in America, but there's 2 people always with me. Put me on the plane, took me off the plane, got my bag, took me to the hotel. You know, I didn't have to think about anything.
Yeah.
All I had to concentrate on was standing in the middle of Fifth Avenue and the camera guy going 3, 2, 1. Yeah, that's then my bit to do.
Yeah.
Because everybody's doing something different. People are filming it, sound recording it, whatever. And my bit is a bit stand in front of the camera and talk to it.
Yeah.
And much to my utter surprise, nobody wanted that bit. They're all a nice production team. Nobody wanted to be pulling to the camera at and would all run and hide behind the tripod. Every time we filmed something, it was like I'd gone for an X-ray.
Yeah.
You know, where they stick you in a room and everybody runs off.
Yeah.
And then press a button. It's a bit like that. I found it very comfortable, but as you said, I don't do parties. I didn't go to my own rap party in the filming. I didn't do any social stuff that was associated with the program whatsoever, because I don't do that. And then people don't believe when I say I'm not sociable. You know, at home here, we don't have friends round. We don't go out for meals with friends. We don't socialise.
Like I say, I know you're an ambassador for your, you know, the autism charities, and I know that, you know, what the programme did, you know, the Autistic Gardener, you did 2 series of it, where the first series you took, you know, young potential garden designers who all had autism, and then the second series was just yourself designing gardens. It shone a light on the whole autistic community and just showed it in a positive light, which I thought was amazing and was really good.
The way forward now, as far as the television's concerned, for me is for me to do different things.
Yeah.
And me to be the autistic presenter, but nobody uses the word autistic, not even once.
Okay.
That will, here is a man presenting a program about such and such and such a thing. The fact that I'm autistic. Have you seen, like, Dancing on Ice has got the first same-sex couple? They came on this morning on breakfast shows to sort of promote it. But they were the first to admit that they shouldn't be promoting it because it shouldn't be wrong.
Yeah, should be
it
the norm.
It shouldn't be different. They were promoting it because it had never been done before. But I think autism would gain the most from me presenting something on telly. And I'm autistic, but not using autism in every single sentence.
Brilliant. Absolutely. Well, fingers crossed all that work. Like you say, there's, you know, TV's come back to you. And
it certainly is, but I feel sorry for everybody else. Here I come.
All right.
There's people on Twitter who sort of tweet, why haven't you been on telly? And I'm thinking, in another year's time, they'll probably be tweeting, why are you always on telly? Because that's how it happens, isn't it?
No, exactly.
For ages, and then all of a sudden, you know.
They're back with a bang. Just wrapping up now, like I always ask my garden designers, if you know, it could be a garden you've already designed, but I want you to describe to me your dream garden space. So it could be something you already have, or something you would aspire to have, or you would aspire to create, and also what you drink while you're there. But I think I remember you don't drink, do you?
No, tea would be my drink.
Okay, so tea is your drink of choice. Can you describe to me your fantasy garden, please?
5 or 6 acres and land art.
Land art? What's that?
Land art. All the ground in shapes, geometric shapes, all done in turf.
Ooh.
And trees. I've done quite a few land art things in the past for clients. Good gardens that are like hit singles. They're very punchy, very simple. And, you know, people catch on to them very quickly.
So
really like very strong, I personally like very strong structural spaces. Mind you, so do a lot of my clients, but then I don't think most of them had a choice.
Well, they kind of know what they're getting when they're employing you, don't they? You know what I mean? They don't really have much of a choice.
Yeah, they employ me because one client actually turned around and said she wanted me to design her garden, but she didn't want to see it. She wanted me to design it, give it to the contractors, and they just built it.
Oh, that's the best. That is the best client. They're paying for it and they give you free rein. Love that.
Yeah, and they'd actually get to see it. I think that would be... Any clients out there really fancy that. It really works.
But you know what? I think that's so true. So if all the design shows I work on are... You know, I always say, you've got to crack an egg to make an omelette. And if a homeowner or, a client is watching you rip something apart... That's when it looks rubbish. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of, it's worse. That's when all the get cold feet. So I think it's best for them just to turn up at the end.
This sounds really bad, but should a client have an opinion?
No, never.
Because they're not qualified.
No, it's true.
So if you have a client that goes, you've put circles or you put, I quite like them square, they're not qualified to say that. And then... So, let me get on with it. It's like I go and visit my tattooist and I sit there for 3 hours and he draws wherever he wants.
Really?
Yeah, I have no say over any of my inking.
Do you not even give him a theme? Do you not even give him an idea of what you want?
No.
Wow.
I know what he does.
Yeah.
And what he likes to do, and I just allow him to get on with it.
That's
brilliant.
And then
shapes and patterns. On one occasion, which I thought was really funny, I actually went to see him, not even knowing where he was going to tattoo me.
No.
Yeah. It was about a quarter of a third of a back piece.
Alan, that's amazing. Well, on that crazy note, there's me. I've worked on tattoo fixers and all these shows, and I haven't got a single tattoo. Only because I think I've got too much of a control freak about me. I'd plan it, and then if it wasn't exactly how I wanted it, I'd go insane. So
you don't plan a tattoo.
I know it's gotta. Yeah.
You go to a guy who does black and grey. I like black and grey, and he'd won awards all over the country for his stuff, and he loved patterns and shapes. So I said, cover me.
Yeah.
So off he went.
Off he went. Well, that's brilliant. Well, on that note, Alan, it's been an absolute joy speaking to you. If people wanted to find you on social media, is it Twitter's your main thing?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram as Autistic Gardener.
As Autistic Gardener. Alan, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you, and thank you once again for chatting to the TV Carpenter.
My pleasure.
What a cool guy and inspirational friend he is. He's my go-to person. I'll be out and about and I'll see an amazing plant. I'll quickly take a picture of it and then I would tweet him, message him, saying, Alan, what's this? Or he'll answer straight away. So if you have any garden information you want, he's the person you should contact. Look him up on Twitter. He's really active on Twitter. Such an inspiring man and great fun to be around. I hope you enjoyed that interview. Now that's it, we're coming to the end. Don't forget you can get your 15% discount by contacting Thorndown at thorndown.co.uk and typing in the code the TV Carpenter. I look forward to speaking to you next week. I've got some exciting guests coming up and I'll be able to tell you more about the Ideal Home Show, hopefully. And all that's left for me to say is thank you for listening to the TV Carpenter.